We'll start just a bit about Syria. Here's a map. You need to understand that Assyria and Syria are not the same. Okay, that's number one. I think it's helpful to understand that Syria and Assyria are not the same. So there's Syria, and that is a region right kind of north of Israel, right in this region here. Okay, and then there's Assyria, which actually, if you follow this green path here and kind of up this way, this is the Assyrian Empire here. Okay. The Babylonian Empire, we're going to talk about later, is more in this yellow and comes down further. And then the Persian Empire is much larger. You can see it covers much larger area. So you've got the Assyrian Empire, you're going to get the Babylonian Empire, and eventually you get the Persian Empire. All three of those are important to us, okay? So we're in Assyria. The major cities of Assyria are Nineveh. Nineveh. And anybody want to take a guess what the other one is? Nineveh is the famous one. What? Nope. Unless it could be multiple names. I mean, I'm not a scholar on this either. Asher. So Nineveh and Asher were their big cities. You guys are familiar with Nineveh, right? From VBS, right? We just studied that. You need to understand that during the period of Isaiah's time, Nineveh is probably the most powerful nation in this whole region, but they're on the decline. Okay? So as a nation, they're on the decline. One of the rulers that we're going to be concerned with is a guy named Tiglath-Pileser. Tiglath-Pileser. Sometimes just called Pul, P-U-L. He rules from 745 to 727. Somewhere about there, okay. During his reign, the northern kingdom of Israel pays him tribute. So think about that. So you got the northern kingdom of Israel, the 10 northern tribes, sometimes called Ephraim or just Israel, and they are paying Tiglath-Pileser tribute because in his kingdom, you can see he kind of reaches down in the furthest regions of his kingdom actually just gets to Israel, right? You can see it's just kind of on the outskirts. So if you're on the outskirts of somebody's reign, you're not at the core. So if Israel was situated like right here, they would have been like truly dominated by the Assyrians. But because they're on the very edges of Assyrian reign, it's kind of like, well, maybe Assyria's got bigger problems to deal with than us. And so they will often, you'll see in this whole deal, the northern kingdom of Israel will be paying taxes, so to speak, back to Assyria, and then they'll decide to quit doing that. And then Assyria like, hey, you can't not pay us money. And they'll come down and they'll have these battles. And then they'll say, okay, we give in. Yeah, we'll pay you tribute. And then they'll go back. Assyria will go back to its normal business. Because Assyria is dealing with Babylonia. That's a much bigger enemy to Assyria than Israel. Okay? So they're kind of small potatoes. Now, all I'm doing right now is go through these Assyrian neighbor kings. So there's a point where Tiglath-Pileser dies in 727. And at that point, there's the question of, will the new ruler be as strong as the old ruler? You have a regime change, you sometimes wonder, maybe this guy's not nearly as strong. I mean, even in our own politics, Trump has been much more forceful and strong in national or international politics. Whether you like it or you don't like it, that's, you can't deny it. He's, you know, the previous administration under Obama was much more acquiescent, much more trying to be kind and gracious, where Trump just kind of says, we are the power. We will not necessarily be cruel, but we will act in a way that is one of power and dominance, okay? Well, so then with Tiglath-Pileser dying, the question is, and if you're an Israelite, maybe this new guy's not going to be nearly as strong as Tiglath-Pileser. And his name is Shalmaneser. Shalmaneser, okay? And as it turns out, he goes from 727 to 722, basically. And Shalmaneser turns out to be just as bad, just as strong. He actually lays siege to Samaria, which is the king, the capital of the northern kingdom. And just about takes it. He dies in 722, which is the fall of the northern kingdom, but it really is the next leader whose name is Sargon. Sargon. And Sargon rules from 722 to 705 BC, okay? And Sargon rules until a guy named Sennacherib, and that's all we're going to, these are the four guys that I want you to kind of remember. Tiglath-Pileser, Shalmaneser, Sargon, and Sennacherib. And Sennacherib, we'll go into more details on him later. So, okay. So this is Assyria, okay? These are your four kings, and they basically are running from 745 to right around 700, 701, something like that. This is the period in which Isaiah ministers, okay? Now, Isaiah is not preaching to the northern kingdom. Isaiah is preaching to who? You can look that in Isaiah 1:1 if you want. Who is he preaching to? Judah and Jerusalem. Now, so he's dealing with the southern kingdom. So if I have my, this is my Q-tip, of which I say is Israel. You have the northern kingdom with its capital of Assyria, Samaria. And you have the southern kingdom, often just called Judah, although it also includes Benjamin, but they kind of, Benjamin's so small, it kind of gets usurped in there, with Jerusalem as its capital. Okay? Kind of following that? You also need to know that there's a significant portion. Syria is right here, not Assyria. Syria is right here. They are also a kingdom that is in danger of being swallowed up by the Assyrians. So there's going to be an alliance sometimes of these two countries. They're going to ally together, a bunch of small guys saying, let's combine, have an alliance in hopes of making ourselves strong enough to not be overcome. Also, down south, here, is Egypt. So Egypt is going to be a player. And Egypt is not really that strong, or maybe not, they might be strong in their own kingdom, but they're not really strong up here. But there's going to be some connection on both the southern kingdom and the northern kingdom. Instead of looking to God for help, they are going to look to Egypt for help. okay? Again, the major dominant struggle that they're all having is we don't want to get overwhelmed by the Assyrian Empire. That's the big issue. All right. Questions on that so far? That's just, I'm just laying kind of groundwork here. Okay. If you have this sheet right here, remember I've passed that one out before. I have a few more copies, not too many of those, but I could make more for next time. I think I have two copies left. If somebody wants those, you can have them. But some of you may already have them. So I'm going to give it to Mary, and if you guys want them, you can raise your hand and she'll give them to you. But on this sheet, well, let's start with the introductory statement in Isaiah says that there are four kings of the southern kingdom, right? You see that in Isaiah 1:1? There are four kings of the southern kingdom. And they are Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. So that's going to be important. You're going to have, so in the southern kingdom, Judah, you're going to have Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. Okay? And those four players are going to be important. If you don't have any recollection of who these guys are and what's, you know, anything about them, they're just going to be names to you. Okay? So I'm going to try today to help you understand some of these guys' names. All right, and what's going on in their life. Before I do that, I want to give you a couple of the northern kingdom kings that are also at this period. Okay? So there's going to be Zechariah. I think the next one's Shalom. Shalom. Pekah. And Hoshea. And Hoshea is the last king of the northern kingdom. He's the last one there. Now, just so you can understand, there's actually a couple other guys in here. And I just want to do this, not that it's that important to our study of Isaiah, but it just helps you think about these people in a more real way. So Zechariah is king of the northern kingdom, and he is actually assassinated by Shalom. So you can see that it's not just this nice, normal reign. Shalom assassinates him. Well, Shalom's kingdom doesn't last very long. A guy named Menahem, who's kind of like a military leader, he assassinates and kills Shalom. Okay? And you have to understand that, like, Menahem does this because he is pro-Assyria. So his point, so Shalom's probably anti-Assyria. Shalom says, hey, why are we fighting the Assyrians? Why not just join the Assyrians? All right? You can see kind of the politics going on there. It's just like we have today. We have different views on it. What's the solution? Well, okay, should we fight this or should we join them? Have different ideas, okay? There's another son of Menahem called Pekahiah. And it's interesting because Pekah assassinates Pekahiah. So it's not a good time to be king. And we're talking relatively quick here. Anywhere from months to a couple years as all these kings reigned. Okay? Pekah assassinates Pekahiah because he is anti-Assyrian. Okay? And And he actually will ally with Syria. So if you're anti-Assyrian, you're probably going to ally with Syria. Let's see here. The last thing I want to tell you about Hoshea, the northern kingdom is actually pretty big at some points in this region here. But by the time that Hoshea is king, virtually his kingdom is only the capital city of Assyria and a few surrounding regions. He doesn't have much, okay? He's pretty small at that time. Okay. And all of those guys, Shalom, Pekah, Hoshea, they are not exactly like this, but they are pretty contemporaneous with these guys. So on this sheet, it looks like they're at different places, but technically, all I've done on this sheet is just list the kings on each side, whereas the what I'm doing for you here is to show that these guys are all contemporary. So I'm not saying you have to memorize all these things, but if you have some understanding of Pekah and Hoshea, and particularly Ahaz and Hezekiah, you're gonna be well served. Okay, you need to have, because they are major players in the book of Isaiah, and if you don't understand the dynamics of them fitting with one another, you're really gonna miss out on. A lot of the preaching of Isaiah is in this historical context. There are times that Isaiah is going to preach directly telling a king what his policy should be. And if you don't understand anything about that, you're not going to have, it's just going to be, you know, hard to get, okay? Okay, again, questions before I move on to the next thing I want to talk about. Am I losing you guys? Benji, have I lost you? If I've lost Benji, I'm in trouble. All right, so now we're going to talk a little bit about Judah. And this is where we're going to get into Kings. And this is going to take a little bit longer, okay? You still have your sheet right here. Look all the way back up at Asa and Jehoshaphat. Okay, Asa and Jehoshaphat. Asa and Jehoshaphat are relatively good kings. And because of the relative amount of lack of conflict in the region, there is peace and prosperity during their reigns. Peace and prosperity. And you should know this is a common theme throughout all of the Old Testament. As soon as God gives blessing, it almost always leads to apostasy. Which, by the way, is a good thing that you need to keep in track of. We're always asking God to bless us. I mean, of course we should ask God to bless us. But you should also counter that with the fact, Lord, I don't want the blessing that you give me to be the actual cause of me walking into apostasy. Okay, so because it's happened not just once, over and over and over again. In fact, I think one of the glories of eternity is that God will be able to give us the fullness of his blessing and it won't spoil us. That's pretty cool because all of history has not been able to do that. Every time he blesses them, turns bad. Okay, so anyway, good kings, Asa and Jehoshaphat, relatively. Then you get to Jehoram, King Jehoram. And Jehoram marries King Ahab's daughter. Now, if you look in the northern kingdom of Israel, Ahab, he's over there. He is one of the worst kings. He's terrible. So the fact that Jehoram marries Ahab's daughter, not a good thing, okay? And he plunges relatively decent Judah into apostasy. So Jehoram, you might want to put a little B there, bad, okay? And the Philistines, which are a small little kingdom here, they're not real big, right in this area here, they actually come in and attack Judah and Jerusalem, and they kind of whoop up on Jerusalem, and they take into captivity all of Jehoram's house except for Athaliah and her son Ahaziah. Now, Athaliah is not a good lady either, okay? I did a paper on Athaliah in seminary, and it's kind of a fun thing to follow her. She's not a good girl. Her son, Ahaziah, rules for 2 years and then is killed in battle. So you see that. And then you see in my notes, in parentheses, is Athaliah, because she is not a king, but she rules when her son dies. And she fully endorses Baal worship. Okay? So you're getting... Okay, typically the northern kingdom is not as faithful as the southern kingdom, but you're seeing here that the southern kingdom is embracing the same sorts of things that the northern kingdom is embracing. Okay, so she actually kills. This is Athaliah. It's fascinating. These details are so fascinating. She has the rest of her family killed, because they all could be potential threats to her power, right? I mean, your family, have your whole family killed. You think about that, how terrible that would be. Well, the priest kind of does a rescue mission and saves her son, Joash. Okay, and this is, again, fascinating story. He saves her. And because Joash is literally raised by the priest, and when he comes into power when he's, 7 years old, and he, and it's really the coup of the priesthood of the kingdom. So you got the king that's totally corrupt. The priests are saying, we got to fix this. And so they kidnap the son, they keep him in hiding, and then they bring him out and they have a coup over Athaliah. Okay. It's really, when you read the history of this, it's really fascinating. Well, it makes sense then that under Joash, there are sweeping reforms. They destroy the temple of Baal. They refix Solomon's temple. But you have to understand that it's not really Joash. It is the priest behind him. His name's Jehoiada. It's the priest behind him that really is doing all this. And as soon as this priest dies, Joash returns the kingdom to Baal worship. Okay? All right, Joash is taken out. He dies in battle, and Amaziah takes his place. This Amaziah is in 796 when he takes the throne. He follows the Lord, and they say, but not wholeheartedly. Amaziah actually challenges the northern kingdom, and they have a battle. Northern kingdom, southern kingdom, both Israelites, right? Civil war, fighting each other under his reign. He's beaten. Southern kingdom beaten. Jerusalem ransacked. Amaziah taken captive. And at that time, when Amaziah is taken captive, Uzziah takes his place. And it's easy to get confused, because another name for Uzziah is Azariah. So you think Uzziah, and then you got Azariah, and these are the same person. Okay. Okay. Uzziah rules for 52 years. Now, what do you think of when you see someone ruling for 52 years? God's blessing, a time of peace, a greater time of prosperity. Okay? So, and Isaiah is called into his ministry sometime before the death of Uzziah. So if it starts in 790s, it's his starting in his ministry probably in the 740s, which is right where we were talking about at the beginning of this. Okay? You should also know that Isaiah and Micah minister at the same time. So as we're doing the study of Isaiah, if you want to go over and try to just read through Micah, they call Micah sometimes little Isaiah. Because Micah, obviously, is just a few chapters. Isaiah is this grandiose book, right? So if you let's turn to Micah just for a moment. Read Micah 1:1. Anybody got it? Raise your hand if you got it and you can read it. All right, Ryan, go ahead.
Kings of Judah, which he saw concerning Samaria and Jerusalem.
Okay, so there's a couple things I want you to see there. Same set of kings, except for Uzziah. Now, it's actually not a whole lot different because we don't think that Isaiah was there during the entirety of Uzziah's reign. At some point at the later portions of Uzziah's reign is when Isaiah has his ministry. So they're basically contemporary. But notice what Micah says that he is giving his prophecy concerning. Samaria and Jerusalem. Now, what is Samaria? Capital of the northern kingdom. So whereas Isaiah is speaking to Judah, which you could very well say that that's the kings of the southern kingdom because that's where they came from. But you could also say that his ministry is more to that region just around Jerusalem and Judah. Whereas Micah's ministry is both to the politics, the political leaders of the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. He's speaking to both of them. Okay? But other than that distinction, they're very similar. Okay? Now, Isaiah and Micah live in a period of economic revolution because as Uzziah dies, this period of stability is coming to an end. Okay? That whole 50 years was a time of material prosperity. But it spawned selfish materialism. Now, start thinking about your own country. Right? Since World War II, we have had stability in our country. But has it been a time of increasing religion and faithfulness to God? Right? So you can see there's much parallels. I'm not going to make the parallel that America is Israel. You can just take that out. But there are parallels in terms of the political and economic situations and social situations that Isaiah and Micah are dealing with that do very much connect with where we are today. He was living in a time of the disintegration of personal and social values. He was living in a time where wealth was invested in the land with a result that instead of each Israelite having their own little plot of land that was given to them by God in the covenant, there were some massive land owners who were, hey, I'm going to take your piece of land from you, and I'm going to take your piece of land from you, and I'm going to own all this land. It's going to be mine. That kind of thing was happening in Israel. Okay? There was a growth of vast estates. Many Israelites were being oppressed by their own people. Even though that there was wealth in the land, most of the Israelites were not experiencing that wealth. And religion became the last of the priorities. At least Mosaic religion. There's lots of pagan religion. And why would there be an increase of pagan religion? It's this simple. There was a belief that the prosperity that they were experiencing did not truly come at the hands of their covenant God, but because of these other pagan gods. Yes, it does. So, there is an oppression of the wealthy upon the weak and the poor. And there is this growing fear of Assyria. So you've got an external enemy and you've got internal enemies. Okay? Any questions now? All right, so go to 2 Kings chapter 15. 2 Kings chapter 15. We're going to look at verses 17 to 20. We are going to be looking at a lot of verses. From now until the end of the time, we'll be looking at a lot of stuff. 2 Kings chapter 15, verses 17 to 20. If you want to read, raise your hand. We'll get the mic to you. There you go. Christian's got it.
17 through what?
Just 17 through 20.
In the 39th year of Azariah, king.
Wait a minute. Who's Azariah? Uzziah. Okay, go ahead.
King of Judah, Menahem, the son of Gadi, began to reign over Israel. And he reigned 10 years in Samaria. And he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart all his days from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. Pul, the king of Assyria.
All right, stop. Pul is that first Tiglath-Pileser. So Pul is Tiglath-Pileser. He's the first of those Assyrian kings that are going to go. Go ahead, keep going.
Of Assyria came against the land, and Menahem gave Pul 1,000 talents of silver that he might help him to confirm his hold of the royal power. Menahem exacted the money from Israel, that is, from all the wealthy men, 50 shekels of silver from every man, so give to the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria turned back and did not stay there in the land.
Okay, so Menahem, remember, he assassinated the king before him. He's got his own little political struggles going on just in the kingdom of Israel. And then the Assyrians come down. He says, whoa, I can't deal with this. I got my own problems. So he tells Assyria, I will pay you tribute. And Assyria basically gets behind Menahem to try to prop him up, to give him more power against his local enemies so that he can exert power over his own people in an oppressive way. But he's getting Assyria to do it, help him. And then Assyria says, okay, you pay us this tribute, we will leave you alone, we might even help you a little bit, and then he goes back to his own land. So the army is no longer there, okay? Then skip down to 29 and 30. Who wants to read next? We're going to have a lot of reading, Danny, so hand that to whoever. 29 and 30. Yeah, verse 29 and 30 of 2 Kings 15.
Oh, sorry.
Debbie, you want to read it? Yeah, just two verses. 2 Kings 15, 29, 30.
In the time of Pekah, king of Israel, Puah.
Sorry, it's a lot of tough names here. Pretend you're reading the Lion King.
King of Assyria came and took Ajon,
yeah,
Abel-Beth, Micah, Janoah, Kadesh, and Hazar. He took Gilead and Galilee, including all the land of Naphtah, and deported the people to Assyria. Then Hosea, son of Elam, conspired against Pico, son of Remalia. He attacked and assassinated him, and then succeeded him as king in the 20th year of Jotham, son of Uzzah.
Okay. All right, so then, remember Pica? The northern kingdom is threatened again by Assyria. The reason why Assyria has threatened them is because when Assyria goes back, the pain of tribute is a little burdensome, so they just say, you know, let's not pay it this year. It's kind of like playing that Russian roulette. Let's not pay our taxes this year and see if the government's going to come back and get us. I'm too small for the government to care, right? That kind of thing, all right? Well, the Assyria does care. They come down, and they conquer, and they take many people captive, okay, during that time. Now, to try to put this in perspective, let's try to divide America between the North and the South like we were in the Civil War. So you can imagine some foreign power coming in and conquering the North. That would have made a lot of Southerners in the Civil War happy. But some foreign power comes in and conquers them. And on the one hand, as a Southern person, you may be happy that the Northern Kingdom has been dealt with, but what are you also afraid of? They're going to keep on coming, right? And that's exactly what the issue is going on. So as the Northern Kingdom is defeated by the Assyrians, there's a sense in Judah, okay, all the things going on. The Assyrians were taken because of how wicked they were. And we are obviously God's chosen people. We have Jerusalem. And God has placed his name in Jerusalem. And we're the pure blood people. The temple is there. We have the true kings of Judah. We're not those apostate kings. But you know what? In the end, the people living in Judah were just as rebellious and wicked as the people living in the northern kingdom. And so you have this false sense of security among the people in Judah. And you do have this, all I can say is attention. Some people don't like, I like to use the term, but God has given promises that include Zion, that include Jerusalem. And so if you're in Judah and in Jerusalem, even though you're not living a life that is pleasing to God, you think you're okay. Okay? And that's exactly the context of the ministry that is going on. Okay? Now, you have Uzziah, but then you have Jotham. And Jotham reigns from 740 to 733. 740 to 733. And we're actually kind of going backwards, but somebody read for me 2 Kings 15, 1 through 9. Dan, you going to read that?
Yeah, okay.
You are, because Danny's giving you the mic. 2 Kings 15, 1 through 9. Or just 1 through 4.
In the 27th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Asariah, son of Amaziah, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 16 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 52 years. His mother's name was Jecoliah. She was from Jerusalem. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, just as his father Amaziah had done. The high places, however, were not removed. The people continued to offer sacrifices and burnt incense there. Keep going.
Jotham's dad is Uzziah or Azariah. Notice that the high places were not removed. Tell me, how do we understand the high places? What is it speaking of there, and how do we bring that into our own context and lives? The high places. Uzziah, or pretty good guy. He's reigning in his kingdom 52 years, but the high places are not removed. Altars of worship to false gods. Yes, not in the wrong place. That's right. Yep. So I would apply this in a more universal way to us. Every one of us has high places in our hearts. So I'm assuming y'all here at Faith Church are trying to walk with God faithfully. But there are still, you're not perfect. And there are little idols of the heart that lives inside of us. And we haven't always dealt with them. And God is faithfully, by his Spirit, cleaning house. Sometimes against our will. But often with our willingness, right? There's a sense of us saying, God, do this. But we're not perfect. And we know this, right? Because as a parent, you see your kid walking into rebellion. And you're like, I don't want him to do that. But in your heart, you know that some of the things that they're doing in rebellion are just maybe a little bit more of what they learned from you. Right? So you kind of recognize, oh man, I don't want my failures, my imperfections to be the cause of my kids going awry. Right? And so you feel this. Okay? And of course, pastorally, you have to understand the grace of God overcomes all this, and he does overcome our faults, and none of us are perfect, and all those kind of things. But a lot of times I would read the Old Testament high places, and I'd be like, man, those scumbags, why don't they get rid of the high places? And it's just this, it's like, you kind of want to cover your bases. So yes, okay, yeah, I'm trusting in God, but isn't it a little bit here that I want to make sure there's a little security here I can have as well? Right? So that's kind of that going on. Dan, you want to make a comment?
To me, the parallel from a national standpoint, there are parallels in every nation every time, I would think. But in our nation, you can think of certain national sins that we don't touch.
Yes.
Roe versus Wade, the internet and pornography on the internet.
Yep.
There are those kind of things. I'm not talking about being a Christian nation even. I'm just talking about those. There are sort of obvious things that we just haven't touched.
That's right.
So
that's excellent. Good point. Okay, so we're going to see in the case of Uzziah, who's a relatively good king, that he's not perfect. So look at verse 5 of 2 Kings 15. And the Lord touched the king so that he was a leper to the day of his death. You're just like, what? Why would God do this? Well, in Kings, they're kind of a little bit more favorable to the king, so they don't really explain this. But if you go to Chronicles, so turn over to 2 Chronicles 26. 2 Chronicles 26. Chronicles is written, we think, more by the priesthood. And they will often be more critical of the kings. So it's kind of like their alternate history. Right? You have the king's history and you got the chronicle's history. And they let me give you our perspective on this, right? Really interesting. And I'll just read this. But when he, Uzziah, was strong, he grew proud to his destruction. Hey, I've been king 52 years. God has blessed this ministry. God has, he's done some pretty good things. We are so different than those kings up north. By the way, one of those untouchable sins, I've done a lot of reading on the Civil War, one of the untouchable sins that was led largely to the destruction of the South in the Civil War was pride and arrogance. And I'm not just saying generally. I'm reading a book right now. General Bragg is the commander of the army in like Tennessee. He's got guys under him like Polk and Hardee and all these other guys. Bragg gives a command. And it's a direct, clear command. And it was a good command. Had the people followed his command, they probably would have beaten the northern army pretty soundly if they'd followed that. Hardee and Polk look at the command, and instead of just following their orders like a good, humble servant would do, they hold their own little council and say, we don't like this. We don't like this command. And so they just don't do it. And Bragg comes, and he can't do anything about it. He's like, okay, they're not going to follow my command. What am I going to do? He actually asks if he can resign because of the pride and arrogance of his subordinates that will not follow him. That's just one example of how pride can come to your destruction. So Uzziah's proud. He grows strong. He enters the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. That's bad, right? Kings are not allowed to go into the temple to do this kind of stuff. And he thinks, boy, I'm as good as the priest. Why can't I do this? And he goes in. And that's the cause of this whole thing. Now, whether Uzziah is truly saved, I don't know. But it's a very sad story. A sobering lesson to any of us. Now back to 2 Kings 15. Jotham reigns in his place. And look at verse 8. In the 38th year of Azariah, Uzziah, king of Judah, Zechariah, the son of Jeroboam, reigned over Israel in Samaria 6 months. He does what was evil in the sight of the Lord, as his fathers had done. He did not depart from the sons of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. Now, what you need to understand from this is that even though Uzziah grows proud, and he's good with faults, the northern kings are just consistently evil. That's what you need to see that's going on. They are just consistently evil. So 2 Kings 15, 32 to 35. Howard, would you read that for us? 2 Kings 15, 32 to 35.
In the second year of Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, Jotham, son of Uzziah, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 16 years. His mother's name was Jerusha, daughter of Zadok. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, just as his father Uzziah had done. The high places, however, were not removed. The people continued to offer sacrifices and burn incense where incense there. Jotham rebuilt the upper gate of the temple of the Lord.
Okay, good. All right. What do you notice about Jotham in his upbringing? What does the writer tell you about Jotham's upbringing? Not a whole lot, but it's there. He's a little older, yeah. But what do they mention? Mention his mom. Do you think there's a reason for that? Absolutely. Do you think she had an influence on him being a good king? Very much so. There's a reason why we say that, you know, the power of a mother to influence her son. And she does. Greatly influences the whole kingdom because of her raising up her son Jotham. So Jotham is sort of a good king, not perfect again, doesn't get rid of the high places. Then we come to Ahaz. Ahaz is from 735 to 719. So that is during, and this is what's significance about Ahaz, or 715, excuse me. That is during the time when 722 occurs. And who can tell me what's so important about 722? Fall of the northern kingdom of Assyria, of Israel by Assyria. Now listen to what they say about Ahaz. So 2 Kings 15:38 through 16:4. Just hand that to someone. They'll read if you give them the mic. 38 through 16:4.
2 Kings 15:38
through 16:4. Yep.
So Jotham rested with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David, his father. Then Ahaz, his son, reigned in his place. In the 17th year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, Ahaz, the son of Jotham, king of Judah, began the reign. Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. And he did not do what was right in the sight of the Lord his God, as his father David had done. But he walked in the way of the kings of Israel. Indeed, he made his son pass through the fire.
You know what that means? Sacrificed his own son.
According to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord had cast out from before the children of Israel. And he sacrificed and burned incense on the high places, on the hills, and under every green tree.
Okay, so the big difference here, right? Not getting rid of those places is one thing, but actually yourself going and making sacrifices on them is quite another, right? No mention of his mother, right? He does what is incredibly despicable. Ahaz, a terrible southern king. Now you're an Israelite, and you're dealing with a king who is incredibly wicked. You're also dealing with Assyrian foreign powers at the same time. You're trying to figure out, what do you want God to do? You want God to get rid of your king? You want your king to have victories on the battlefield so that you get rid of the Assyrians? What do you want to have happen? We ever get confused like that in our own day? What do you want God to do? You want him to just give us financial wealth? I mean, one of the real critiques that I have of the Trump administration, there's a lot of things I really love about the Trump administration, but one thing I really do wish we would talk more about is that the peace or the well-being of a nation is much more than its economic wealth. And Trump's not really doing a whole lot, other than maybe the abortion issue, to address the evils of our land. And I know that a president can't do everything, but you should be trying to encourage that which is good and not that which is immoral. So anyway, I'm not being too critical of Trump. I like him in many ways, but there is certainly an arrogance there. I listened to one quote recently where Trump was just saying, I just worked harder than everybody else. I did this. I can do this. And I'm just thinking, is there any humility here? Is there any sense of thankfulness to God at this point? So, anyway. So Ahaz, there he is in this situation. 2 Kings 16, look at verse 5. Then Rezin... Now, you don't need really know to know Rezin, but who's he's a king of? Syria. Not Assyria, but Syria. And Pekah, the son of Remaliah, whatever. So you got the king of Israel and the king of Syria, and they come up and wage war on Jerusalem. They besiege Jerusalem. Okay? They join forces. Now, why did they do this? Because if these guys, the northern kingdom and Syria, are really in danger of being taken over by the Assyrians coming from the north, you don't want a guy on your southern border who could attack you from behind. So before the Assyrians get here, let's wipe out Judah, and then we can come together and unite to try to take care of Assyria. That's what they're doing. They would have liked to get Judah's help. Ahaz has no interest in them. He actually is a little bit pro-Assyria. Look at verse 6. At the time Rezin, the king of Syria, recovered Elath for Syria and drove the men of Judah from Elath, and the Edomites came to Elath and where they dwelt to this day. Basically, Judah's on its heels, pushing them back, taking over portions of the country. Now, this conflict between Syria, Israel against Judah is very costly. We'll get to this later, but in one battle, 2 Chronicles 28:6, Judah loses 120,000 soldiers. And 200,000 of her women and children are captured. So we're talking about real stuff. You read the Bible and it's just like, yeah, whatever, I don't know what's happening. Think about what happened today in America if 120,000 of our soldiers were killed and 200,000 Americans taken captive. You'd be like, whoa, it gets your attention real quick. And Isaiah is speaking into this situation. Ahaz has trouble on all fronts. He is a wicked king. He doesn't care about God. He's wicked. And Isaiah is coming to speak to Ahaz, and he's also trying to give the people hope. Hope. Everything looks terrible. All the promises of God look like they're falling down, and we are done. And he's trying to give them hope. At the same time, confronting the evils. You see how terrible and how hard of a job that Isaiah does. And if you read Isaiah, on the one hand, it's like he's just beating you up. And the next hand, he gives you this glorious promise. And I think that's because of the situation in which he lived. Look at verse 7 of 2 Kings 16. We'll end with this. So Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria. So he's got his threat from Assyria in the northern kingdom, and he says, of course he's not going to trust in his God, so he says, maybe I should side with the Assyrians. So he sends messengers, I am your servant, your son. Come up, rescue me from the hand of the king of Syria and the hand of the king of Israel who are attacking me. Ahaz also took the silver and the gold from where? The temple, and sent the treasures of the king's house as a present to the king of Assyria. Oh boy. And it works initially, because Assyria does help the southern kingdom. And you might be saying things like, hey, it wasn't such a bad idea. It got rid of our enemy. Sometimes I feel that way with, and I don't want to make too many parallels, but I'm like happy for everything that's happening with Trump. And then in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, oh boy, we could be getting set up for even worse. Not because of just Trump, but because of, I don't see us as a people truly repenting of our sins. I don't see the church growing and maturing and things getting better in that way. And I'm fearful of that. So, God knows that Ahaz is evil, but he still sends Isaiah to Ahaz to tell him what is the right path. And he's even willing to give wicked King Ahaz a sign that he will be faithful to him. And that sign is in Isaiah chapter 7. And that's where we'll start next week. Isaiah chapter 7. Anybody want to just tell me what that sign is? Emmanuel. So we read every, Christmas, the Emmanuel, and we have no clue what it's actually about. God is basically telling Isaiah, I'm going to get rid of Assyria. He's telling Ahaz, I'm going to get rid of Assyria if you would only trust me. And you're going to see what Ahaz does with that. Because God says that the path out of all of this is not to lift up your own righteousness and pick yourself up by your bootstraps and be better people. The path out of all of this trouble and wickedness is faith in God. Trust him and his promises. That's a lesson for us today. That is a true lesson. Now, we're only about halfway through the incredible, this is one of the most fascinating times in history through this introduction of Isaiah and what's happening in this time. So if you want to keep reading in 2 Chronicles, that's good, 2 Kings, but read a little bit of Isaiah, kind of get the feel of what's happening. I guarantee you, if you continue to take the time to fight through this, when you actually get to the actual words of what Isaiah says, it will make way more sense to you. But it does take work, and I know it's not easy, so thanks for your patience. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for the Word of God, and thank you for how you have given us Kings and Chronicles and Isaiah and how all these weave together, and they are fascinating, and how they prove over again your own faithfulness, and they also put us to shame for our lack of faith. And I pray, Father, if anything that we pull from this as a people here at Faith Church, that we would better and more fully trust your promises. In Jesus' name, amen.